Two bachelors choose their perfect woman without knowing who's real and who's a deepfake.
Like, subscribe, or don't. I don't give a shit.
Joining me today are two special guests. Established content creators, writers, directors, Lauren Gillis and Elaine Hutton. They're here today to talk about their comedy sketch series, Content Farm. And they have an established background in the performing, writing, directing from Lester Tripp's Theater, of Lester Tripp's Theater. And I'm just so excited to have you here and welcome.
Thanks for having us, Christine.
Yeah, so I watched Content Farm and oh my goodness, I was not only blown away, but it's so creative and so it makes you think. And I want to know, and the audience wants to know, as well as the viewers and listeners, how did you come up with the idea? I mean, I love the title, Content Farm.
So basically, it was from being inundated with content from real content farms or content mills. So, you know, Content Farm basically be a platform, an institution, a content creator that puts out tons and tons of very low quality content. So one of the most sort of recognizable ones would be something like 5 Minute Crafts. So you're seeing absurd, dangerous, meaningless, colorful life hacks with, you know, hot glue and food and garbage just being pumped out, you know, 7, 10, 12 videos a day. Yeah. And often pieces of content being recycled within the channel's output, sometimes like even in the same week. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing this in our feed and thinking, wow, it's so bad. Like the content is just so awful. Surely it can't just be humans putting this out, because how could their brains take it? And in fact, sadly, a lot of real content farms are run by humans and staffed by poor humans who are doing this for a living. Mm-hmm. But we started thinking about, because things like buying fake Instagram followers, which are not humans, is so normalized as kind of a background thing. But as we're scrolling, we're not necessarily thinking, oh, she's a bot, he's a bot, that's a bot, this is not human content. We started thinking, okay, what if a content generating bot ran a content farm and it really took off?
And you know what, like, what was the process like? Was it like 2 years, 3 years, 5 years? Like how long did it come to develop?
So we started making a demo in 2020. We got some funding to make a prototype. And at first it was more like a sketch show. It still had the narrative thread of Judith, the bot, the neural network content creator. But it had some less obviously related sketches in it. Then we got production funding and turned it into a series. And it sort of coalesced into kind of all the sub worlds within this larger world have something to do with either, you know, faking your face, faking your voice, the generation of meaningless content, stealing other people's content, stealing other people's faces. And everything sort of revolves around that in the series right now.
And it was really interesting having like, coming from theater and wanting to make like all these little sketches, but have a narrative thread and have it relate back to each other in an interesting way. We love sketch comedy, and it's one of the things that, you know, you always are like, oh, I wonder what happened more. Like, give me more about that. And with content farms, they do. Like, they'll take the same content and they'll show it to you again and they'll show it to you again. And so we wanted to sort of weave together this narrative, something that you don't usually have in sketch comedy, as well as the ability to like unfold these sort of smaller sketch comedy worlds into larger, longer narratives.
It's scary when I was watching it, and educational in its own right. And you know, like, and I want to congratulate you on your launch.
Thank
it
you.
Yes, it was wonderful. So, what has that feedback been like so far?
I feel like it's landing with people. Mm-hmm. It's so strange the time that this has been released, because 3 years ago when we were like, okay, so, you know, there's a content generating bot and it's stealing everyone's face, and it's stealing their voice. It can fake their, you know, it can deep fake their whole body. People are like, what's a deep fake? you know, where in my life would I find a content generating bot? And now in the past few months, the past 2 weeks even, you know, there's just been an explosion of development and launches in AI, and everyone's talking about GPT-4, and deepfakes have become so normalized at this point that, you know, we don't have to explain
as much.
we have to explain so much.
You're like the pioneers.
I mean, it's
really, I mean, this is really so unique concept. And you know, it's just like, as I said, it kind of makes you think, you know, is that a bot? I mean, it's just so like Love Island. I mean, I saw, you know, how, like, was it expensive? Like, how, what was the budget like? You can, you know, share.
For sure. So our budget for the three episodes was just over 200K. So not a lot for, you know, a TV. I mean, TV, web series, what have you.
We were in this program that we built this from. It's sort of like, here was the cap of how much money you can have to make whatever you want to make. And I know between myself, Lauren, and our other producer, Nicholas, like, we felt the uniqueness of this story and of this moment, that we were like, you know what? Instead of reasonably making one 10-minute episode to sort of just use as a, you know, as a little sneak peek, we were like, no, let's push it to the limits. Let's get every shoestring and favor and extra 1,000 hours that we have to put into this, so that we wanted to show the style of the narrative arcs, the style over the three episodes. And there's things that we shot that even got cut. We made a washing machine out of
garbage, sheet metal.
Oh, wow.
And we put her in like this handmade garbage machine, and we rolled her, and as we were editing it had to get cut. And we're hoping that it will have, like, in this content farm, you know, cycle.
Yes.
We'll be able to release it on our own in a different way, and have every moment that we filmed and all the B-roll and all of that sort of make the most out of it. So
yes, there'll be more. Like, you know, it will continue on. You know, I'm sure. But you know, going like it's Jessica who starts to use different ways. Like, that's, can you share a little bit about, you know, the storyline?
So in the show, there's a pair of bots, and they're sort of, you know, apologies to all computer scientists, you know, like, shameful anthropomorphized neural network. And so the bots create this fake Instagram influencer called Jessica, and basically, you know, do a composite of a whole bunch of different ladies' faces from Instagram. And the technique that we used to actually realize this character was deepfake. So the bot is doing sort of a more advanced version of fictional deepfaking, and we're actually using deepfake. So Jessica, the influencer that you see in the story, as the bots learn to figure out what is offensive, what generates revenue, what's appealing content, what is appealingly intimate, what's off-putting. The influencer Jessica is played by Elaine. So her facial movements and, you know, from the neck down, and the voice are Elaine, and the face is nobody.
Yes, I mean, it's like, but like, what would you want people to take away from the series?
I think if it causes you to enjoy an aspect of the internet that you hate and feel powerless to stop, and also causes you to ask even one time, huh, maybe this outrageous thing I saw that makes me so angry and want to kill other people, it came from a bot. Could it have come from a bot? Then I would be happy.
Because it's just, it's overwhelming. I know for myself, you feel like, is that real? Is that fake? And, you know, as I keep saying, when it's like, this is needed. This, what you produce, what you created is, and coming from an impressive theater background, like, did I miss anything when I said directors, writers, singers, do you sing too? No.
We sing a bit, not in this show. We design, we are the production designers and content farm as well.
Yeah. So, is there anything else that was there like a favorite part that you enjoyed the most? Because you take us on a journey, but yeah, is there
in the creation of it or in the show itself?
In the show itself.
Yeah.
I love any moment when a character is waiting for the death knell of the comments. That moment of tension. There's a few of them. Which, and I find it funny that it's always a bot waiting to find out what the comments say. But of course, we think that they're going to have human anxiety, but they don't. Do bots even have anxiety? I don't know. But yeah, the anxiety of waiting for the comments to pour in.
Yes. Yeah. I like the dogs, the three dogs. Yeah. That was so cool. So here I'm giving it away. But if you know, so what's next for you two?
So we'd love to make more content farm, but in the immediate future, we're working on a project called Day Gamers, and it's about a woman who attempts to make a documentary about three pickup artists who are trying to revolutionize the world of seduction by gaming in the day. They are the Day Gamers. But of course, the mid-2000s, Me Too, Elevator Gate, the pandemic, everything, you know, comes at this documentary, and she has to remake it. Mm-hmm. And so it's about the awkwardness of trying to date in the 2010s.
Yeah.
And it's also about the hostility that people receive on the internet when they try to make a positive change. And in this story, everyone is animated earwigs.
Wow. That's just, can't wait to see it.
We learned a whole new set of film skills, like took off everything we learned from theater, applied it to film, and now, okay, what is a new challenge that we can figure out, which is animation with live action and combining all of our design skills as well, so.
Yes, you know, an impressive theater background, as I said, and you know, it's transferable skills, right? And here you are, and there's more. So people want to check it out. Where can they go?
So if you just go on cbcgem.ca and type in Content Farm, you can watch all three episodes. And if you just search Content Farm on YouTube, you can subscribe to our YouTube, and we will have plenty of nasty garbage content curated and edited together that fits into the world of Content Farm for you to watch in the coming months.
Oh, it's wonderful. Is there anything else you'd like to add? Follow you?
No, it's been a really exciting ride to get into this world. Every detail of the Content Farm world, all of the design, all of the pacing, all the music, like the time we spent with our sound designers, shout out to Quinn and Drew, they were amazing. Like, just the fullness of this world, like, it's exciting for us to either A, get the chance to continue the story as when we wrote it, it has more evolutions and more expansions, and the ability to also do that just online through the sort of, you know, expanding out these storylines, seeing behind all the B-roll, all the extra stuff that you don't get to see in a polished series, that there is a place for them to live on the internet, which is like in itself like in a very exciting form.
And anything you'd like to add?
I would say to anyone listening, if you're, you know, if you liked, if you check out an episode of Conifarm and you like it, if you're into parasocial relationships and dead mall aesthetics, we'll be making more stuff for you.
Thank you. I love it. I love it. And did you want to leave, you know, your Instagram handles or anything? Because we had that.
Yeah, sure. Should we just say them? Yeah, they're
yes,
underscore content dot farm underscore.
Thank you. Thanks so much. And I'd like you to come back.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Thanks, Christine.
Thank you.
Joining me today is, he's a talented musician, MC, host of a karaoke, popular karaoke every Thursday at the Georgie's Pub in New Westminster. He's also a TV film editor and consultant. Doug Lucas is here today to talk about his music career and share some tips for those who are interested in a music career or editing as well. Welcome, Doug.
Thank you for inviting me, Christine.
I always have a habit of saying Mr. Lucas. I think it's because
that was my dad. If the old saying goes, that was my dad. I'm Doug. No problem.
But I really appreciate your time today. And, you know, when I think back how we started, you know, and I'm learning so much about you, I think that we never stop learning. And I didn't know you started your music career at the age of 15. Is that correct?
That was 14, but it was close
14.
Enough. Yeah, 14. I was just on my way home from school one day, and I was approached by a guy who said, hey, do you sing? And I said, well, I can. He said, well, I'm in a band. We're looking for a singer, and we got a gig in 2 weeks. So I said, I'll go with that. So I went to his place at after school, and we rehearsed, and then we were playing for quite a few years after that, as a matter of fact, until I left Nova Scotia to move on. So it was a lot of fun, and it was my start.
Yes, but was there a pivotal moment that you knew that, hey, you know what, I love music so much and I just want to pursue a career?
Well, the funny part about it, Christine, is it's not so much music. I do love music, but it wasn't so much music. It was about being an entertainer. That meant being live on stage or creating, you know, emceeing a show or being a part of a different kind of show. To me, it's all about entertainment, and I believe that it all starts with you being an entertainer, even as a musician. You can be a great musician, but if you're not a great entertainer, you might as well stay in a studio. You know, you have to entertain the people who come to hear you just as much as they came to see you.
So, I mean, do you come from a family of entertainers?
Well, the funny thing about my dad played harmonica on the radio when we were young, and my mother had a great singing voice, and so did my dad. And so Christmas, my siblings and myself and our parents would sit around, and dad would play the harmonica, mom would sing, and we'd do Christmas carols and all that kind of stuff. And music was always a part of our whole upbringing, because I've got six sisters and a brother, all of whom love music too. So, you know, I was the second youngest sibling, so I got to see all that energy, you know, growing up. So it was always music in the house.
Yes, and I mean, was there a, is there a favorite genre that you really enjoy? Like, is it blues, is it jazz, is it all?
Something, I just love music played well. And I certainly love people who can entertain when they play too. So when I was young, my mother took me to, this one person, Joe Tex. I mean, he was very famous at the time. And I was only 8 or 9 years old. And my mom took me to see him, and I saw Ray Charles when, I was very young. My mom took me to those kind of places, whereas I would never have been able to get into them because, you know, it was major events. But my mom recognized the fact that I liked music as much as I did. And so she took me out to see these great, great performers. And it was really something to see. I just thought at the time, you know, if I can garner that kind of, audience, it doesn't matter if they're one person or 100 people. I just thought that would be a fun thing to do. It's what I started playing.
Well, you know, you have, for those who have never listened to you or gone to see you, you have a great singing voice. Is there a song that you particularly like?
Not specifically. Now, my wife, she, that's a different thing. When we go out and I'm out to sing somewhere, she will point me in which direction, what song she wants me to sing. But there's just so much things about music that I like, that there's bands that I like, but you know, there is nothing specific because I've had 54 years of music in my life, and it's hard to say which one I would like the best at this point.
Yes, and you know, I was thinking too that you always support others, and from your music career, and I mentioned at the intro that you are a very in-demand karaoke host on Thursdays at Georgie's Pub. Can you tell our viewers a little bit about that in case they want to join?
Well, I'll tell you something. I enjoy, now there's a lot of live musicians who think I'll never do karaoke, but realistically, I know a lot of great singers who use karaoke as a practice session for them, because in this case, they can have any genre of music, any style of music they want, and they don't have to rely on a band to play it. So they can practice anything, things that they normally wouldn't sing, or things that they'd like to sing. And I've been very fortunate, especially at George's in New West. We've got some great talent there. I'm not a big fan of the shows that are on TV because they're so staged. I've seen people who are just as talented, just amazing. Just, you know, you'd stop and have to listen. The people with just the microphone and the speakers, and as raw as it gets, and they're still incredibly, incredibly talented. So that's the kind of music I appreciate, the kind of shows I appreciate. So I'm really happy that, you know, we get so many. And I'll tell you something, we get great listeners there too. I mean, great singers are one thing, but when you have people who appreciate that, it makes it just that much better.
And I mean, there's a, you know, you're supporting the community and, you know, check it out, you know, and supporting musicians and, you know, have your opportunity to sing, and it's great. And, but I, you know, the question I have is like, as a professional musician, like, you know, you do consulting work, you're also an editor. Do you think from your entertainment gene, your DNA, do you think it's transferable skills into what you do today?
Of course, I think that everything you do, like to entertain the public, can be transferred to another part of that genre. Really, the best thing about doing things like and not being afraid to step outside of what you're used to is that any experience you have is transferable. I'm very fortunate. I have a certificate from the Toronto network of broadcasters. You know, from years ago now. But, and everything that I've got learned along the way, I was able to use in my other fields because entertainment is entertainment. And the good thing about it is my base is music, and music transfers into everything. And once you get used to the music and know what music can stir another person or pull another person in, you can apply that to just about anything. I'm really happy when I edit and I get to use music in my editing because I know the feelings that music can stir. And when you can mix the both of them together, it's very powerful.
Yes, it is. And I mean, like, who is your biggest supporter?
Well, Christine, other than my wife, I think it would be you. No, I have a few people that I know that I've known for many, many years that always, you know, support my ventures, my entertainment ventures. They've been absolutely wonderful. But I think realistically, it was never a career for me as much as it was just a joy of being able to do it. And so I could bounce from one genre of entertainment to the other without feeling like I was ever missing out on anything, because each of those give me a different kind of a good feeling about what I'm doing.
That's wonderful. And last question, any tips for those who are wishing to, you know, get into editing, who want to get into music?
I think the best thing to do is just enjoy what you do and pass that enjoyment along to somebody else. When you enjoy something and you do it to the best of your ability, it transfers into whatever it is you're doing. And then the people who are watching it or listening or being a part of it, they feel that too. It's like a great actor. When you see a great actor doing this thing, you can see his emotion and it transfers into your emotions. Well, it's the same thing with anything, musically, anything entertainment-wise. When you can translate that into whatever it is you're doing, then people will pick up on that. So my best thing is to do, you don't have to think about a career of doing it. Just have to remember that if you're doing it for the enjoyment of everybody, not just yourself.
Doug or Mr. Lucas, I want to thank you very much for being a guest and being so supportive of not just myself, for those out there who are inspired by you. And thank you so much. I'd like to have you back.
Oh, no problem. And I thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
Here we are at the Vancouver Art Gallery, and we're at an extraordinary exhibit, and it's the Art Party Fashion Fictions. And I'm with Amber Dawn Bear Robe, I'm on Blackfoot name, as many butterfly women from Siksika Nation, Treaty 7. And I'm so thrilled to be with you here today, and I'm so glad that you're here at this amazing opening art party. It is spectacular. And you are the contributing curator.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So tell us your role.
Well, I'm the contributing curator, and I was primarily brought in to represent the Indigenous fashion of Canadian and American designers. And I'm just so thrilled this is a global fashion exhibition, and that the curator, Stephanie Rebick, who's the lead curator, Anthony Keenville, the executive director, were just invited me to be a part of this and to recognize and to bring Indigenous fashion into this global conversation, because too often Indigenous fashion is left out of the fashion story. And so I'm so thrilled that this narrative is being presented to the public. Such an important narrative. And by the way, I am wearing Pamela Baker, who is in the fashion who is in the exhibition. This is a vintage Pamela Baker, and it's pink. She didn't know this, but she made it just for me.
Oh, it's lovely. And I love your hair, and you got the pink happening.
And I also just want to point out that I'm wearing Indigenous artists, jewelers from based in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is where I am based. Cody Sanderson, George Rivera, Anthony Pinnacus, Standing Elk. And I really hope that you and whoever's watching can come and visit and attend the SWIA Indigenous Fashion Show in Santa Fe, New Mexico, August 19th and 20th, which is expanding into Indigenous Santa Fe Fashion Week, the first week of May, 2024.